Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of July 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vague. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Drew Lerner will be by with a look at the weather forecast. We'll take up the agricultural cash grain markets with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's the ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. And we'll hear a little bit about corn production and its ability to recover from the really wet feet it has had over the last month and a half. That with agronomist from here on campus, Emerson Nafsiger. So stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were a bit higher, but not a lot. July contract actually in the lead option was down a quarter at 413 and three quarters. September at 422 and a half was up a half. December up a quarter at 431 and three quarters on the settlement price. And the March futures at 441 and a half up three quarters. Next year's July corn, 451 and a half, a penny and a half higher for the day. July beans in the soy complex were down 12 and a quarter cents, $10.44. The final price. September at 10.32 and three quarters, down 8 3/4, and the November at 10.29 and a half, 7 3/4 lower. January at 10.34 and a quarter, down 8. Next year's July beans at 10.08 and three quarters, down 5 1/4. Bean meal up 30 cents at 3.59.80. Bean oil 55 cents lower at 33.01. Soft red winter wheat for the day down 27 1/4 cents at $5.87 and a half in the lead option July. September 27 1/4 lower at 5.88 and a half. The hard red July at 576 finished 17 and a quarter lower. Live cattle futures in the August at $151.75, up $3 for the day. October also up the $3 limit. Feeder cattle in the August at 337.5 higher finished 218.10. And the lean hogs in the July contract were $1.02 higher for 100 pounds at $77.22. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. In fact, I encourage you to go there. Check out all the USDA report numbers on the USDA links. They're still good to go at this point. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $56.79 a barrel, down $2.68. Ethanol futures at $1.60 9/10. That's 0.3 cents lower. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, is 4 3/10 cents lower at $2.06 per gallon. And the heating oil, or diesel fuel, trading at $1.83 9/10, up a nickel, or rather down a nickel, on its last trade. The natural gas for the day at $2.78, that's down 5 1/4 cents on the afternoon. The outside markets show the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 17,622, up 99 points. The U.S. dollar at 96.515 is up 0.854 for the day. And the gold futures on the afternoon in New York at $1,167 were down $4.75. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A 20% chance of showers yet. Mostly cloudy, a high of 77 on a southeast wind at around 5 miles an hour. Tonight, a slight chance of showers, then a chance of showers, some thunderstorms, those after 8 p.m., mostly cloudy and a low of 60 degrees. An east-northeast wind tonight at 6 to 11. It will gust to 15. Chance of rainfall this evening set at 30%. Tomorrow, 30% chance of rainfall as well. That'll come before 8 in the morning. Otherwise, partly sunny on the way to 76 degrees on an east-northeast wind at about 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy and 59. Friday, partly sunny and 77. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 61 degrees. July the 4th, Independence Day on Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 81. Should be gorgeous. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 64. Dark skies for all of those fireworks. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It is the very first day of July 2015. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson joins us this afternoon. She's from right here in Champaign County to take up the agricultural marketplace and what happened throughout the day today. Thanks, Jackie, for being with us. I really do appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome, Todd.
Well, let's start with the acreage and U.S. grain stocks numbers. Can we go back through them again today? They were released yesterday morning at 11 o'clock. What did they look like?
Well, they were. We came in with 88.9 million acres compared to the 89.2 that we had been trading off of. And they did make an adjustment to harvested acres instead of the normal. Well, it had been, normally it would be 92.5% harvested acres. We've been running about 91.5. They dropped it to 91.2. So you can tell that they're already banking on the fact that we're going to lose some acreage. On the bean side of things, we came in at 85.1. We had been trading 84.6, and there the harvested acres came in pretty normal at 84.4. You know, anybody can argue about that. There's a lot of question in my mind about that acreage number. I do think that they looked at intentions and maybe adjusted us down already for where the full season beans were supposed to be planted, but the heavy rains fell, and that's why they're only going back out and resurveying Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri, where there'd be a lot of double crop. It would be hard for me not to believe it, because they've told us right up front that they not only ask intentions, but they actually ask how many acres are left to be planted out of those intentions. And after this morning's show, I got an email from Ellen Dearden, and she said her husband had been recontacted, and that had never happened before. So I'm hoping that, you know, that they're doing due diligence here, and that could change the attitude, because, you know, yesterday I think a lot of them were thinking we were going to drop down to 83 million acres or something like that. Wheat was at 51.1. 55.3 was where we were at before, and there they're using about an 86.4% harvested level. You know, that might be a little questionable, but I think that they're going to be slow to make a whole lot of changes to that. On the stock sides of things, and I think this is where reality starts to set in, you know, corn we had 4.4 billion compared to 3.8 billion last year, and that the farmer is actually sitting on 51% of that, compared to 48.9 last year. So he's carrying more corn at home. Mind you, this was from the middle of the month. You know, so I'm hoping a lot of guys rewarded this rally with a whole bunch of sales. But beans 6.25 compared to 4.05 last year, and that says that the farmer is sitting on 39.7% of the beans versus 26.9 last year. You know, now there were a lot of pundits out there saying beans are 90% sold, so I don't know where their numbers are coming from, but all I know is that this was reported by over 70,000 farmers, so I'm hoping that we get a fairly accurate number. Wheat 753 versus 590 last year, and the farmer's sitting there on more wheat, 20.6% versus 16.7% last year. So, you know, one of the big drivers yesterday was that there was a lot of speculation that they understated or that they overstated last year's bean crop, and therefore the carry-in is going to change on the July report, could change as much as 70 million bushels due to the implied usage that came out of this last quarter. And so, you know, whether that happens or not, it's already in the market. But, you know, it was a crazy day, primarily because I've been observing now when we've been going up on grains, it's been very interesting because livestock market has been falling apart and the hog market has been gaining, which has usually been the dog. And so, you know, that I believe comes because of spread unwinding and because money flow is coming out of the livestock market and coming into the grain market. Now, yesterday, if you looked at livestock numbers, you know, we had feeder cattle down 450, Todd. We had, you know, live cattle hurt severely, and we were up like gangbusters over here in the grains. Today we've got live cattle limit up.
Right.
We got feeder cattle up $3. I think the money moved back over there, and it kind of looks that way when you look at the wheat. I think some people woke up and looked at this and said, how much can we do before we actually get demand destruction? basically is what happens, you know. And so I think as we move forward toward the July 10th report, we will be in a situation where, you know, we may have to, we know that there's going to be yield adjustments and acreage adjustments probably on beans from the resurvey. And yet at the very same time, Todd, you know, it's a situation where I think it's unfair for all these people who are running around out here saying, oh, these yields are going to drop this much, and that's when it's going to take the carry out to. They never make any adjustments to usage or demand when they do those things. And so we just have to be very careful and think about our own situation from a profitability standpoint.
And you mentioned the movement of money from one place to the other at the CME Group, livestock to grains, and the other way around as well. There is concern about money movement in Europe at this point, and it's related to Greece. Can you talk about it and how it flows across the planet and what that really means and why it makes a difference to those in our part of the world and in agriculture in particular?
Well, you know, when you look at Greece, you know, they defaulted on their debt to the IMF last night, and they're like the wimpy of the international market. You know, I will gladly pay you tomorrow for a hamburger today. The referendum vote, if they vote yes and they accept the new austerity numbers, then the prime minister is saying don't vote because it'll give us more bargaining power. Well, you know, I don't understand how he thinks. So, the IMF is really holding the Greeks, they're holding their feet to the fire. You know, can the people stand to walk on hot coals? We'll see. Right now, what they've had to do in Greece is, you know, they've had to restrict how many dollars they can take out of the bank. It's the equivalent of $60 U.S. per day. Remember, a week ago, they took out 400 million euros in one day. They've reduced the pension payments. They've reduced the supplements to pensioners' income. And, you know, the big question we'll all be asking when we see what the referendum vote comes out at is, will the Greek banks open up with their euro as a currency on Monday? And what does this mean to the rest of us? Well, this could be a very tough situation. I think the eurozone can survive without these guys, even though they don't seem to think that. And so, but it could put a real dent into, at least for a period of time, into the U.S. dollar, driving the dollar higher perhaps. I personally think it would just be great to get it settled, and I think they should have done this to them a long time ago instead of letting this drag on. But we'll see. Sunday will be the referendum, and Germany, which is the largest debtor, has said, we're not talking to you before then. Let the people talk. We don't care what the prime minister says anymore.
Okay, one final question for you, and I only have maybe a minute. They're corn, beans, and wheat. Corn and beans in particular. Technical indications, places that farmers might be looking at in the futures markets for indications of moves, places to sell, things that they should be watching.
Sure. Yeah, well, you know, we went up and tested the January high at 432 yesterday. We went through it and tested it today and failed at it. We've got a monthly high on the December 15 at 433, so right in the same neighborhood. And then the December continuous resistance is at, monthly resistance is at 440. So you know we're very close there on the December corn. On beans, the November 15 continuous chart, monthly chart says 1047. We went to 1040. If we had the ability to close above 1047, 1079 is in the game. The thing we just can't really forget, you know, is that we have 300 or 400 million bushels, extra bushels of beans coming out of South America. So I think it's, if you don't want to make the sale in the cash market because you're afraid it's going to go higher, at least protect it from going lower. On the wheat side of things, I think that $6 level is going to be a very, very tough level. We got the, you know, that 615 is where we went to on September and 621. And in talking to the guys in the wheat market, you know, there are plenty of issues in wheat. There's no question. There's a lot of quality issues out there. There's vomitoxin out there. We just don't know exactly where we are, you know, and so I think you have to reward something like this. And, you know, if you do make a sale and you're still concerned, buy a call. You know, just make sure that you're being, you're rewarding a sale. And when I say make a sale, like on corn on old crop, if you're sitting on 140,000 bushels, selling 1,000 bushels is making a sale, but it's not rewarding a rally, is what it's. And so.
All right. Hey, thank you so much. We do appreciate it. That, of course, is Jackie Vink. She's at Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Just a couple of news items related to agriculture for the day. Attorneys general from over a dozen states have filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Corps of Engineers. The case over the EPA's new rule defining waters of the United States under the Clean Water Act was filed Monday afternoon in the U.S. District Court in North Dakota. South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley says the EPA is overstepping its authority.
Now that the final comments have been filed, they're about 300 pages. We have various concerns about what this will do to our states, to our agriculture, to our economic development, where we're really challenging what the EPA is trying to do from both a legal sense as well as, you know, from a states' rights perspective, trying to essentially require the EPA to stay within the bounds of the law.
Jackley expects the states to hear from the district court soon on how things will proceed.
We would anticipate in fairly short order direction from the court, normally what we call a scheduling order, giving us direction and time frames that will allow this to move forward and have the state attorney generals have their concerns that are being voiced heard.
The states involved in the BOTUS complaint are Alaska, Arkansas, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C. on Monday, President Obama signed the TPA, or Trade Promotion Authority, signaling a win for his trade agenda and for agriculture. With TPA out of the way, the Trans-Pacific Partnership now nears completion. Trade negotiators involved in the deal representing Asia-Pacific countries say negotiations could wrap up by the end of July. American Soybean Association President Wade Cowan of Texas explains how TPA works.
All it does is, to give a guy an example is, you know how bad you feel when you've got to go into like your local John Deere dealership or your Case IH and you're trying to buy a tractor and you know what you want to do, but you got to go back and you got to have the banker approve everything or maybe a banker's committee. That's the same thing with TPA. They just want the ability to go make a deal and then it'll be put up to Congress and Congress votes it straight up or down the way it is.
Cowan says 60% of soybeans grown in the U.S. are exported.
If you go down the road and you're looking and there's five rows of beans in a field, three of them are going into an export market and we're using two of them here. And of those that go overseas, a lot of those go into the Asian market, with China being by far the biggest buyer.
Wade Cowan is the president of the American Soybean Association. Well, you're all familiar, I know, with the amount of rainfall that has come in the last month and the problems it's created in the field, in particular for the corn crop. It's been underwater, it's been stressed, and many of you are wondering how it will react the rest of the season if conditions were to turn better. I asked Emerson Nafziger, agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, exactly that question.
The corn crop started out great. We planted early. We planted and had a crop in the middle of May that looked to be in very good condition. And as everyone knows, the condition report has been dropping now each week. We're now down to a very mediocre condition. And as is usually the case, when excess water is the cause of our problem, this is not well distributed around the state in terms of how much the crop has been affected. This is one of those situations where topography means a great deal. And we can see fields in the northeastern part of the state where water essentially stood on practically the whole field. And those fields are yellow, stunted. Some of the crop is already dying. It's been standing in water long enough. But if a crop should be as high as our head by the 1st of July, and this one is only knee-high and yellow and still in very wet soils, the prospects for it coming back and doing well are practically gone at this point. The crop doesn't recover very well as we get close to pollination time if it's been damaged to the point where its growth is affected and where the leaves are yellow and not green at this point in time. So the crop where the water has not stood in the higher parts of fields where it ran off, or if we're lucky enough to have whole fields where it didn't stand, That crop still has good color and looks very good. I mean, we're not down to zero in terms of excellent corn. We do have some excellent corn in Illinois, but this is one of those times when just the consequences of having a foot or so of rain during the month of June is not something we would ever choose to have. And this year it's going to have a really serious effect on the crop. And it's going to be a while before we see that full effect. One of the consequences of having too much rainfall in June is a root system on the crop that doesn't tend to develop very deep and also can be damaged by diseases and so on. The closer we get to pollination, the slower this root regrowth is going to be and the less potential there is to recover a healthy root system on this crop. And that could come back to really hurt us later in the season because we're going to have a crop that's not very resilient if we get periods of dry weather. A crop in the first week of August can't really start to grow its root system deeper. It doesn't have the capability to do that anymore. And if that system has been damaged, then we would expect, even if there's nitrogen and water left deeper in the soil, that it may not be able to access it and produce higher yields.
That, of course, was Emerson Nafziger. He's an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I checked in with the Andersons over at the Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. They're awfully busy this afternoon, not able to get to me, but just a couple of items that I want to make you aware of. Of course, you can visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And that maybe you should visit the Farm Doc Daily website. In fact, I'm going to type that in and go right there now because I believe, but am not certain at this point, that this morning's webinar that was held with Daryl Good and Scott Irwin should be up on that web page. And it looks like it's not quite there yet, but I'm sure it will be up very shortly. It may be simply that it's on the Farm Doc website. It will be a great webinar for you to take a look at. They discussed, of course, yesterday's numbers from the USDA. And if you go there, you'll find all the thinking that Daryl and Scott have about the coming marketplace. Of course, they will have talked to Emerson as well and discussed what they believe the crop will look like. So if you want to go visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, you can and should. And each and every business day of the year, there's a brand new article written by the Ag Economist posted there. The Illinois Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin is also updated often, and I know there's a new article there that's posted by the weed scientist and the agronomist, and you can find that at bulletin.illinois.edu to stay up to speed on what kinds of things might be happening in your fields if you haven't been able, of course, to get out and scout them. And I suspect you haven't been able to do much of that, at least any more than from the windshield. So visit the Bulletin website. That's at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. And our website is at willag.org. Back in just 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast here from WILL AM 580. WILL FM 90.9 HD3 Urbana.
It's National Ginger Snap Day. The cookie likely dates back to medieval times. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Edward Jenner of Berkeley, England, conducted his first experiment with smallpox inoculation, showing that the cowpox virus provides immunity to smallpox. By the way, cowpox gets its name from cow maids touching the udders of infected cows. In 1860, Charles Goodyear died. He invented the process named vulcanization, which made the commercial use of rubber possible. Vulcanized rubber did not become brittle in winter, nor turn gummy in summer as natural rubber did, but Goodyear never profited by his invention. In 1901, the U.S. National Bureau of Standards was created. Its duties included testing and calibration of measuring scales. In 1910, Ward Baking Company of Chicago, Illinois, opened the first completely automated bread plant in the U.S. The dough and bread remained untouched by human hands until it exited the machine already wrapped. And in 1953, Cheese Whiz was introduced nationwide by Kraft.
And that's this day in agricultural history.
Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Now let's check the weather forecast for the growing regions across the nation. Here's Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Most of the Midwest will see a normal mix of weather as we move forward through this next 10-day period, and it looks as though there should be a fair distribution of rainfall across the area as well. But probably the most important part of the forecast is the opportunity for some of these excessively wet areas to begin to dry down over time. Today's most significant rainfall is expected to be mostly confined to southern parts of the region, and in particular, the storms that were reported this morning in parts of Missouri were expected to continue to occur periodically through the day today. Some of the precipitation will diminish for a while during the middle part of the day, and then we'll see some new firing of thunderstorms as we get into the afternoon and the evening hours, and that precipitation will once again occur across central and southeastern parts of Missouri into southern Illinois. We'll also see the precipitation work its way to the southeast as we move through the night tonight and into the morning tomorrow. For the heart of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, northward will likely see relatively quiet conditions for the next few days. I don't want to imply completely absence of rainfall, but many areas will go through the period without any precipitation, and we'll expect to see improving conditions with river and stream floods moving downstream and an opportunity for low-lying areas to begin to dry down a little bit. It'll be a slow process, but it should advance relatively well. We do also expect to see temperatures in a fairly seasonable range at times, but cooler biases will certainly be around for a few days here. We're expecting highs today only in the 60s across parts of the Great Lakes region. Michigan in particular, 70s will dominate the rest of the Midwest. Maybe another little pool of 60-degree highs tomorrow in a small part of Iowa and Minnesota. And we'll expect to see the 70s pretty common across the region on Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we'll see temperatures back into the upper 70s and 80s across a larger part of the Midwest. Overall, the combination of the sunshine, the precipitation, and the warm temperatures occurring rather briefly over the weekend will all end up being favorable for crops across the region. Certainly the heavier rain that occurs in Missouri and southern Illinois, maybe some neighboring areas, the northern delta over the next couple of days will certainly not be welcome. There will be a potential for some worsening flood conditions in some of that community, but we're not expecting it to be very widespread. In the rest of the U.S., we expect to see some more heat occur across some of the hard red winter wheat country. Temperatures yesterday in central Kansas got up to 100 to 105 degrees. That heat has helped to dry down the topsoil and improve winter wheat harvest conditions. And as we move forward through the balance of this week, we'll see some of that heat disappear as showers and thunderstorms occur tomorrow and Friday, and then disappear again and show up sometime during the middle part of next week. Some slowing of the crop maturation and harvest conditions will likely occur across parts of the central plains during these periods of heavier rainfall.
Our thanks, of course, go to Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated for his update of the agricultural weather forecast. By the way, you can find Drew's forecast each and every business day of the year on our website. Did you know that? At WILLAG.org. Look for the Agricultural Morning Weather link. Each and every day, you'll find a forecast from Drew Lerner